home to see what I could find out. I left my folk and friends with the aim to clear my mind out. Hit the roundy road, many kinds I met there, many stories told me all of the way to get there. Ooh. So on and on I go, the seconds tick, the time out, there's so much left to know when I'm on.
Welcome to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling on KKRN 88.5 FM. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. Unspun tries to unravel the hype and illusions of corporate media through in-depth interviews with truth-tellers and advocates from around the world. We are now streaming live on the internet. Go to kkrn.org and click on the listen button. KKRN is a community radio station supported by listeners and underwriters like yourselves. Your support keeps us on the air. So once again, go to KKRN and click on the donate button to support our efforts. Unspun is normally a call-in show. Today's show is pre-recorded, so you won't be able to call in, unfortunately. But you can send me some email at unspun@kkrn.org. Today, our guest is Heidi Hall. Heidi is running for U.S. Congresswoman against incumbent Doug LaMalfa. According to Heidi's site, and I quote this, Heidi was born and raised in Northern California to teachers who value hard work, education, and equality of opportunity. She has spent two decades in public service, protecting and managing our natural resources and working to promote sustainable solutions to modern challenges. She has fought her whole life for common sense government that encourages innovation, responsibly protects our resources, and empowers community. You can see more on her website at HeidiHallForCongress.com. HeidiHallForCongress.com. I will put a link to that site on our websites along with the archives of this show so I don't have to keep spelling it out. But it's pretty much like it sounds. Heidi Hall, HeidiHall, for Congress.com. She's been campaigning hard for months all over District 1, and now we are only a few weeks away from the election. Heidi was last on with us in May of this year when we talked in-depth on many subjects. Let's welcome back Heidi Hall. Heidi, welcome back to Unspun, an experiment in truth-telling.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back, Doug.
Oh, it's good to have you on. I'm always impressed by your depth of knowledge and by how you've thought through so many issues. I know this has been a tough campaign. I don't know how many hours you're putting on the road, but I know it's just you're everywhere, I think, trying to do as much as you can ahead of this election. How are you feeling about the campaign?
Feeling great. You know, we're just about 25 days out, and you know, in terms of just exhaustion, it feels like the end is in sight, so I'm definitely going to make it. But it's been very exciting. You know, the reason we're out everywhere is because I am kind of new to the game. This is my first election to be running in. And in a rural district like ours, it's very hard to get the word out. So we've been out making sure that people get a chance to meet me, look me in the eye, ask me the questions they want to ask. And the response has been really incredible. People are very excited. Glad to have someone who's as passionate about this race as I am. And we had, I don't know, we had a couple of forums here recently in early October in Chico and Redding and just last night in Grass Valley. And they were very overflow crowds, and I found that this was very, very important, not only as a chance for me to get my views out, but for one of the very few chances the constituents in this district have had to hear Doug LaMalfa's views, which are in some cases quite extreme. There was some surprise, I would say, at the forum last night to hear some of the conspiracy theories that he's buying into. So I think it's incredibly important to get the word out. Just being out on the road and doing all this, I think has hopefully helped all of us to hear more about both my view than his.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the public is starting to feel the dire need of some kind of meaningful action from Congress. Many of us for years, you know, have put time and effort and money into trying to get somebody viable into Congress and that's willing to step up. I did watch the video of your forum here with Doug LaMalfa in Reading at the League of Women Voters, and I was very impressed by your stance, and that you're very clear. I noticed he liked to throw around a lot of little jingoistic terms and talk all about freedom and justice, right. I'm so glad that you're running, quite honestly, because I think a lot of people in this county are, because we need some choices. We haven't had very many choices lately, so thank you for all your efforts. And so let's because there's so many issues. One of the huge ones, of course, which would solve a lot of problems if we could get the economy right. And I know you spoke to several facets of that problem. So I'd like you to kind of talk about what your view is for the economy going forward and what you would like to do if elected.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks for that question. And I probably want to talk about it on two levels, because there's the national level at which Congress is making policies that affect the whole country, and so they affect us in this district as well. And then there are a couple of issues I find are really important, especially to this district, and I think would be really important to help get our economy going. But in the overall scheme of things, the biggest danger, I think, to our economy and getting jobs going are these austerity budgets that Congress is so in love with right now. And I try to make the point a lot, because I'm not sure we all know that there, it tends to be a majority in Congress and in the House specifically who do look like they can get some things done that are helpful for this country. But it's this extremist block of Republicans who really are out and about to stop legislation from moving forward, or putting poison pills into the legislation so it can't move forward. And certainly there's blame to lay on the leadership in the House for not bringing things forward that they know could get passed. But this extremist group is, I hold, accountable, because our representative is part of that. But these extremist budgets that cut, the Ryan budget that's right now on the table, cuts Veterans Affairs help, cuts help to seniors, proposes to raise the Social Security age to 70, proposes to privatize Medicare, cuts disaster relief funding, cuts student loan funding. So it's trying to reduce our deficit and debt by cutting services that impact working people on the ground directly. And in a rural district like ours, where the economy is already sluggish, it's almost like a double hit. So we need to be investing in our people. We need to invest in education and in our people. That means specifically providing food stamps for the folks below the poverty line, extending unemployment insurance until the economy rebounds a bit better, making it easier for small businesses, both with regulatory relief and paperwork relief. And there have been bills to do that are not moving in Congress. So those on that larger scale, that will help all of us. Specifically in this district, we've talked about this before, I think. I talk about it a lot on the trail. We have a huge broadband problem. There's a number of efforts in the state to increase broadband access, but what that neglects to look at is the fact that we don't even have the basic infrastructure up here in this area to start talking about access. So many of us can't even get good access to the Internet, and many of us who can have to pay extra for it. It's critical to our small businesses who can't expand without that. It's critical to attracting new businesses. We've got high-tech sector hot pockets up here that could have huge growth potential. Who wouldn't want to live in this beautiful area and be able to work out of their home looking out at the woods or at the rivers? So, you know, and this is one of those issues where I think our leadership, congressional leadership, state, federal level, even on some local areas, although the locals seem to be picking up on this, just don't even understand the issue, how critical this kind of infrastructure is. So we should be investing in that. We should put money into building the infrastructure, and that in itself would be a great spur to job growth up here. I just want to add also there are a number of other areas we could be doing more. It takes leadership to get out there and advocate for this stuff. But the other area that's obvious is our outdoors industry, you know, kayaking, hiking, climbing, the things we have in this district that attract people who love the outdoors. We could do so much more. And every dollar that comes into an area for something like that is expanded times four, we've seen, when people then start to use hotels and restaurants. And so, you know, the outdoors industry combined with the tourist industry is another area we could be doing much more.
You brought up austerity, and of course, many people in America don't know, but this has failed all around the world where they've had similar problems in Europe. Austerity is just, it leads to a longer recession, depression, whatever you want to call this. I think it's a depression, but I guess most economists wouldn't consider it that. But that brings us to another problem. If people don't want to even see the problem here, it's so hard to get people to look at the real problems. And of course, austerity is not an answer. One of the other things that we could be working on, a huge amount of money could be put into green energy. And I know this is a place where you and your opponent, Doug LaMalfa, widely disagree. It's pretty stark when I was looking at the forums that here in his case, we have what I call a climate change denier, which means this is not a person that is motivated by scientific fact. And as long as, well, I'll let you take it from there, because I don't see how we can move him on one of the most important issues of our time, 400,000 people in the streets of New York to point out about climate science, and it hardly even made the news. And our legislature at every level is kind of are dragging their feet on one of the most important issues of our time.
Right, right. You know, and it's and this came up in the forum again last night. It's not just climate change; it's also fracking, which he is looking at as the alternative energy we should be looking at. And you know, if you look at those tapes, he said, and he did repeat it last night, he sees no environmental problems whatsoever with fracking. And this is on a day that the news reported that the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board admitted that, 3 billion gallons of oil industry wastewater had been illegally dumped in the California aquifers from at least 9 injection wells from fracking. So it's right there in front of us what's happening. And to have a representative who's in that kind of denial is frightening. So on the climate change issue, you know, as I try to talk about the fact that it's not just many of us believing the 97% of the scientists out there who are explaining to us the fact that it exists and it's human caused, but we've got our own government agencies, NOAA and NASA and DOD, preparing for the effects of climate change. The insurance and reinsurance risk industries are preparing for this. So it's already seeped into government agency planning, private industry planning, and here the government, the federal government, is completely behind the issue, not leading the way we can in this country, and so much of it being stopped by these extremists. I think the hope is in that more and more people are beginning to come around to see the truth of this and understand it. And I did find a poll recently that said Republicans under the age of 35 do not buy into climate denial at all. And that sounds very hopeful to me as well.
Yeah, I don't see how we can do anything until we're willing to look the problem in the face. And, of course, part of the problem is with government, and if you get up into that area in the Congress where you're going to be dealing with two of the crucial things that I see is neoliberal economics and neoconservative foreign policy. And,
right.
Yeah, and both of these, it's pretty obvious they're not going to take us anywhere where we really want to be. And one side of that, of course, is what we're talking about here is green energy, sustainability on a long term, mm-hmm. putting something long term in place. So how do you see about that coming about, assuming that, well, and which is a big assumption, you get into Congress, how are you going to deal with these neoliberal and neoconservative policies that seem to have such widespread support on both sides of the aisle?
Mm-hmm. I think that, well, you know, that's an incredibly tough question. How am I going to move the dial on some of these big issues that where both parties are going to extremes? And clearly, I can't do it alone. So I would say that what I can do is continue to speak out clearly and push forward forcefully and be one of the voices that are trying to change the view on this. There are many great people in Congress, and I've met more and more of them as I've been on the campaign trail. They just don't get the news, right? They don't get the headlines, the screaming headlines, but there are really great people trying to do very good work in Congress. And the more we get in Congress to work together, the more we're going to be able to push back on it. But frankly, this extremist point of view is what got me in this race in the first place. We cannot continue to tolerate this. We have to vote these people out. Anybody who is advocating for just, you know, nonstop war and continued denial of science on every front, they're not going to compromise. They need to be pushed out. And so it's going to require people, not just me, but people like me, regular everyday people being willing to step up and run for office at all levels. Probably not where you saw me going on this.
It's a huge question.
But it's really important. Mm-hmm. It's really important for more of us to get involved. You know, the predictions for voter turnout are just dire. And it's a mystery to me why we can't move more people to the polls and to vote, to understand that these decisions we're making about not doing anything on climate change are going to have huge impacts on our own children in the next generation, not to mention our grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And these wars we're continuing to push ourselves into with volunteer armies, right? These are not, we don't have a draft. This isn't something that comes home on our television every day anymore. It's done fairly quietly. And this is just not the direction the country needs to go in. Mm-hmm. Regular people, moderate policies need to get more press. We need to be speaking out more about them, and we're going to have to work harder to push out the extremists.
Let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Unspun, an experiment of truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Heidi Hall, congressional candidate for District 1 in California. We're discussing politics, the situation in Congress today, and the issues that are most critical, I think, in the coming election. The show is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking calls in the studio, unfortunately. But now I want to get back to our interview with Heidi Hall. Yes, the importance of voting, of course. God, if any candidate could get everybody out that realize the importance of the issue, we'd have a huge voter turnout, and we don't have that. I want to take a second just to remind people, because you only have a few more days to register. I think it's the 20th of this month, which is only 10 days away, and then the election itself is only a little over 3 weeks away. So I would urge anybody listening and urge your friends also to register. If you haven't registered, it's easy to do. You can go online to registertovote.ca.gov to do that right online. You don't even have to go into town. So make an effort to do that if you think what you're hearing here is important, and if you want to vote for somebody like Heidi Hall, then you need to register. So keep that in mind. Well, back to your point. Yeah, that was a huge question I asked you before. That is like the mother of all questions, I guess, politically right now. And it's maybe we could take smaller bites of that. We had discussed the trade agreements and job creations before when you were on with me, and I see these trade agreements that are on the horizon that are being talked about in private. Basically, the American public hasn't been allowed to be part of that conversation.
Right.
And so that's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and I think the other one's the Transatlantic. I can't ever remember the full name of that one. Transatlantic Trade and something Partnership, which would involve total, like, I don't know, 40 other countries that we would be subjecting the American worker to compete with. How is that going to help jobs in this country?
Yeah, it's not, and it's going to do worse than that. So it's interesting to me that we've warped the idea of free trade into these potential agreements that go against our own country, our own earth, our own people, because the idea of free or freer trade is really not a bad idea. You get economies of scale. You bring the price down for more people. You make items, the products, more accessible and more affordable. The idea of a freer trade is really one I want to love. But when you see what's happening in these agreements, and I try to be careful not to sort of get into fear-mongering and conspiracies, because I don't believe there are conspiracies out there around these trade agreements. I want to make that clear. But there does seem to be this willingness to push farther than most of us would be comfortable with in terms of removing worker protections and then removing environmental protections. We've fought hard in this country to have those, and these free trade agreements really are trying to take advantage of the fact that there's cheaper labor and fewer environmental protections overseas, mostly in third world countries. And so it would allow multinational corporations to bypass our own regulations, and the most frightening part of it is that it would allow multinational corporations to have more power than sovereign nations on some of these issues. So they could challenge us. They could say, you guys are making it too hard to have free trade by having a minimum wage. So we're going to challenge you in court. And then they're going to set up a court-like system made up of multinational corporation heads. And the idea is that they would be able to overcome sovereign nation rules on things like minimum wage and environmental protection. And that sounds really scary. So, you know, I'm concerned again about not going too far over into these conspiracy theories that somebody's out to get us all. I don't think that's the case. But I do think they're pushing the envelope too far, and that is why these agreements need to be negotiated in the open. The fast track idea needs to stop. I believe they may have put a hold on that. But these are things that the American public deserves to know more about and should be weighing in on. There's the concerns of worker rights and environmental protection, but there's a bigger overarching concern of who gets to make the ultimate decision when there are disagreements between countries about free-flowing products. And that needs to remain with our sovereign nations. That needs to remain in the hands of our government.
Yeah, I agree, and I wouldn't call it a conspiracy because it's out in the open. Special interests are having more and more effect not only on our legislators but on every aspect of our government. So when you have huge multinational corporations dictating through campaign funds and other ways of influencing voters, and not only voters, but our representatives, then I wouldn't call that a conspiracy. I think it's an open attempt to undermine democracy, in my mind. So it's not conspiracy theory or anything. It's an open takeover of defeating the idea of the sovereignty of nations. So I don't see a conspiracy there at all. I see an outright move to exert influence and power through money over the top of democracy. I know a lot of people in the Tea Party are all worried about the United Nations somehow taking over their democracy and taking away their freedoms. They're looking the wrong direction.
Right, exactly. That's mind. Exactly right.
In my mind.
Exactly
so.
Right.
Yeah, the job loss, you know, and you've brought this up in different ways, you know, the job loss situation in America is so horrendous and yet so downplayed. We find it hard to get increases in the minimum wage. We find it hard. All these things that we know, and the food stamp situation. If you cut off food stamps, you're not only cutting off food for people that are down and out, but that money continues to flow through your economy locally. So,
right.
And I know that you talked to this. You know, what can we do? I mean, once you get in, is there specific things that you can think of to focus on that are going to help this job situation besides blocking these ridiculously huge and hurtful trade agreements? Is there something we can do internally here to help our people get back to work?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things. I mean, the two areas where I think we can see some movement would be getting broadband up here, and then doing more on our forests. So the forest, you know, the issues we're having up here with these mega fires, the fact that we've had 30 years of undermanaged forests, that we need to get in there and clear out the underbrush and do fire-safe clearing, is something where I see the potential for jobs. I see the potential for a public-private partnership. There's quite a bit of work that needs to be done. Clearly, it's a huge district with lots of forest lands and a great deal that needs to be worked on. We could use that as a public-private partnership, create some jobs immediately, help to reduce the potential impacts of the fires. We want to increase our disaster relief funding up here. We've clearly made case for this over and over by the reality of the fires. Those are more jobs that are going to be important and going to continue. And then again, in both of these areas, there's been complete lack of leadership. So there's been a bill introduced just a couple of weeks ago, I believe, by Garamendi to fully fund fire prevention and firefighting efforts at the federal level. Why hasn't this been done for the last 30 years? We've had this problem up here for a very long time. So it's simply exerting some leadership, making some common sense proposals and amendments that have clearly direct effects out here. I do think we could move forward on that. We can create alliances with other people in Congress who have similar issues, and we're not the only one battling this, although we are one of the ones the worst hit. So there's work on forest issues that can also be job creators. The broadband issue is one that's just ripe for picking because it's so unknown and misunderstood, I think, at the representative levels. It's just not something many Congress people have been aware of. There is, as I said, there are a couple of groups at the state level working on this. There seems to be a lack of understanding that the rural issues are very different than the urban issues on this. But the private sector is catching on to this. And there are small groups here. We've got one here in Nevada County that's successfully got a large grant to get some more broadband up here. We could, again, provide leadership. We could be pulling together the people who care about this most, putting on workshops, proposing grants to get this started, but certainly it ought to be something that's part of any big budget in terms of investing in infrastructure. And all of those things are going to attract jobs. That's where the private sector piece comes in. If we can help lay the groundwork, the infrastructure, to make it more attractive for new businesses and to certainly help our many existing small business expand, I just think that would be, that's a really great place for growth that could happen fairly quickly, and potentially getting some resources through Congress, plus simply exerting that leadership role, I believe could get us there.
Let me tell our listeners one more time here. You're listening to Unspun, an experiment of truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Heidi Hall, congressional candidate for District 1 in California. We're discussing politics and important issues that are in front of us today, and voting, and we're discussing all kinds of things that should be important to you here. We're getting close to the election in November. This today's show is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking calls in the studio today. And I want to thank you for listening, and now back to our interview with Heidi Hall. Whenever we talk about logging here, I would be remiss, and my friends would probably hit me in the head if I didn't bring up the fact that the private logging, large corporations, actually some of the richest people in the world, are involved in the logging here in the North State on private lands, and they're using clear-cutting techniques. And I think many people don't equate that. They can think about the Amazon forest, and they think about, oh, yeah, deforestation in the Amazon is a huge problem. But we have a similar problem going on here. Is what's your position on clear cutting?
Well, I think there's been enough information out there to show that clear cutting is a terrible idea in the short and long run. You know, you're going to expose entire hillsides to flooding potential, and now that we've got much more extreme weather, that's going to become a bigger issue. I think that's been understood for a long time. The question is, who is out there fighting and working to come up with some kind of a way to do logging that continues to be environmentally protection, that can continue to be environmentally appropriate, but also allows us to still have some kind of a small logging industry? I do think that is something we should be able to make work up here. And we've maybe swung from extreme to extreme, and in the middle you've got, like you say, these private companies just continuing to be out there doing what they want. So I'd want to dig into this more, bring people to the table, and figure out how we could have a logging industry up here. It's never going to be the size it was and shouldn't be, but I do think we can have some responsible logging happening. But we're going to need to bring people to the table again and come to some kind of agreement on that before we can really do much more in the legislative arena. Now, I'm not sure that's a fully responsive question, but that's about where I can go with it at this point.
Yeah,
totally answer.
Yeah, well, it would, I guess my worry is that since these logging companies are abusing private land, I don't have any reason to believe, and I know wherever there's been fires, they pretty much clear-cut those too. We have huge areas in the North State that are deforested, and then they douse them with chemicals and plant monocrop trees, which will take 100 or 200 years to ever even come close to replacing the old forest that they're cutting down. So it's not a sustainable practice in my mind. And I don't know at the federal level what you could do about that, but I do know that you could prevent that in any plan that would come forward out of the federal forest areas to
right.
help logging. And we have a lot of logging going on, but it's not the kind of logging that puts people to work. Clear-cutting logging is not doesn't put people to work. It puts a few machines to work and a bunch of trucks, and a lot of that. That's the other thing that maybe I could ask you here. What is the value of taking huge portions of our natural resources and other resources as far as growing food and water, and we're shipping all of this stuff out of our area? It's like we're being drained. Well, here we are in a beautiful area with lots of natural resources, but all that's being drained for what?
Right.
I guess that's my question. Why, you know, they're building 1,000 cities over in China, but that our trees going to China, especially when there's no jobs produced from that, what's the value?
Right.
Where's the sustainability?
Well, Well, exactly, and that's just the word I was going to use, that, you know, we've got some sustainability groups up here doing some interesting work, and I'm just starting to find out more about that. I've worked on sustainability issues in my job for a long time, but to apply it up here specifically to our forests and our water is going to be key. And again, that's, you know, other countries have done this, too. This is not rocket science. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. But we do need to take a slower approach and a more considerate approach to how we use our resources. We have great resources up here. We should be able to have part of our economy dependent on harvesting and selling, but that has to be at a slow, lower level where it's done with environmental controls in mind. And like you said, where we're using the local workforce. And, you know, those go hand in hand. Sustainability is often about doing something in sometimes a less technologically advanced way. Because we can, again, if you want to look at the fire safe clearing, that's hand crew work. And then understanding the ecology of the forest so that you know which trees are the best to take out and continue to keep the forest sustainable. I think there's a great deal we can be doing with that. I would love to partner with some of the colleges up here that have sustainability programs. I just think it's a whole area for growth and understanding in this area. I do think it can be done responsibly. I don't think we've even begun to look at that, really.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And the other thing I know you've talked to, and I think it's getting to be pretty apparent whether the cause is climate change, but we're into this, fourth year of a severe drought in California, and the water issues are just going to get worse and worse. We've known this for years, actually. Where do we need to go with that? How can you help the district and the state deal with those water problems?
Yeah, well, and they're huge. And as we see the drought continue, we're going to see the water wars that are already starting get very ugly. And I'd like to make sure that we always have a seat at the table when we are discussing the water in the state. That's going to be critical for this area. I'd like to remind people that 60% of the state's water does come from the North State, from our snowpack, and only about 1% of the resources that are put in the bonds to deal with watersheds and to protect our watersheds and build dams and whatnot, only 1% of those resources have come back to this area. The current bond looks like even less than that is going to come back to here. That, to me, is a critical lack of leadership. We should be in there fighting for that. We must have more resources coming back to this area to protect the watershed, which will benefit the entire state, and it's got to happen up here. I'm also concerned about basically equality of access, and I know that is a political time bomb to talk about, but we've got groundwater up here that is critical for many people's farms and ranches and homes, and we're going to start to see, we are starting to see it now with the Glen Colusa Irrigation District that has put out for public comment an EIR, and they're proposing to drill 5 new wells to pump groundwater out for their irrigation purposes because they have some of the oldest water rights in the state. They want to sell their water from those water rights to the Central Valley and Southern California. Now, it's one thing to sell some surface water when there's plenty. It's a whole other thing to be talking about substituting your surface water rights with groundwater, which does not simply belong to the person who is pumping it from above, because aquifers cross over all kinds of property boundaries. So if we're going to allow one group of people to suck up the groundwater for their uses, thereby denying the water to their neighboring ranches and farmers, we've got a major problem. And that's something that's just now coming to light. So, you know, I'm certainly going to be watching what happens with that EIR. I'm going to be advocating, you know, this new state law to monitor groundwater and to have the localities come up with a plan by, I think it's 2020, to figure out how they're going to handle that. It's going to be critically important. And I'm glad to see that there are farmers groups on board with that plan, even though there are others opposing it. You know, everyone's concerned about their water being taken. The truth is that we're all subject to having our water being taken, and so we're going to have to work together to protect the groundwater up in this area and to protect the surface water to make sure we're not just shipping it all to the urban areas where they can afford to pay outrageous prices and leaving us high and dry up here.
The climate, if climate change predictions are correct, all of this that you're saying, even short term, are going to be exacerbated in the future to degrees that we cannot even comprehend. So there is going to have to be some meaningful changes in the use of water, as you say. Even I know Doug LaMalfa won't like this idea, but you know, some farmers might have to cut back on their water. Like you say, all 60% of this resources are going south, and 1% of the benefit coming back this way, and that is so harmful not only to the future. I mean, there's going to have to be huge changes. Are we going to stop growing crops so people can have lawns in the city? I just don't understand how this is all going to work out.
Right, right. Well, and you look at, you know, on the farming issue, because we have so much water up here in our snowpack, it does make sense that we do much of the farming, right, and the growing. It should be up here and not the Central Valley. And there are very responsible farmers here who are doing everything to conserve resources, including water. And there's plenty of technology out in the world right now to show us how to do that. So if we simply provide more incentives for that, I think we can do a great deal, and we can get the rest of the farmers on board to help with that. But it is going to be important that we acknowledge that we, you know, that this is going to be a community effort. Mm-hmm. We can't just be one pitting against another. And then on the climate change issue, you know, we are already seeing the more extreme weather, and that's going to impact us with storms and fires both. Then we've got the drought, and that makes the fires worse, and it's going to make the floods worse. And then I just, you know, this is such doom and gloom, I just hate this, but it's important that we acknowledge it. There's a fairly new report out that I haven't read, but I read the article on it, where some Stanford researchers decided to look at what the climate change impact might be specifically on the drought here in California. And there's something about the atmospheric pressure, the changes in the atmospheric pressure that happens during a drought, that exacerbates the effects of climate change. They're talking about a potentially 3 times greater effect in areas where there's a drought. So this stuff is all interconnected, right? And we can't afford to stick our head in the sand. And it was very interesting to me to watch the reactions of the students at the forum last night in Nevada City. There were a lot of high school students there, which I think is fabulous. And When I talked about the fact that climate change was an issue that we have the responsibility to take care of for the next generation, boy, they were all over that. So I'm hopeful that the kids today, the high school students and the college students and the youth, are beginning to understand that it is their future that is at stake right now. And so they're going to need to become more politically active to ensure that their elders are being responsible and trying to do what is left that we can do to reduce the impact of climate change.
I fight being cynical all the time because I see all these crises coming together. And as you say, they exacerbate one another. It's like, to me, fracking is ridiculous and should be banned immediately all over. Of course, the guys that want to sell you the cheap energy concept, they don't want to go there. But here we are in a drought, and we don't know. This might be the drought of all droughts. This might be the drought that ends California. We don't know. And but to not even consider the implications of fracking and how that's destroying groundwater, you can pump it out. You can drill to 5 more wells, but if they're pumping poison, you're not going to help anybody. You know, to me, that's just crazy. The so many issues, and I'm glad that you're speaking out about them because quite frankly, people are not getting to hear enough about these things. There's another big issue that you might have to deal with, and let me remind the listeners one more time. Last time, you're listening to Unspun, an experiment of truth-telling. I'm your host, Doug Bennett. With us today is Heidi Hall, congressional candidate for District 1 in California. We're discussing the most critical issues that we face here today in America and in California, and we're also discussing politics and the elections. And today's show is pre-recorded, so you won't be able to call in. But you can send me some email at unspun@kkrn.org if you want to make a comment that way. Now back to our interview with Heidi Hall. The other big issue I see is government surveillance. We know the NSA has overstepped its bounds. We know that the oversight committees have not done their job. We know that the FISA court is a failure. We know a lot of things, at least I do. And I worry about this because it is like the precursor to a police state. What are your views on all of this, and what can we do about it?
Well, I'm concerned about, I have the same concerns you do, but I think I'm more optimistic about fixing this one. There's definitely been government overreach really since 9/11, and now that we have so much distance between now and then, and so much information is coming out, thanks to, you know, WikiLeaks and some brave people who have shown us what's going on. The government really can't continue to do this. Public opinion is overwhelmingly against the kind of overreach they've been executing. Republicans and Democrats alike have come together on this issue in a big way, and I am very confident that in the next Congress, barring some of the kind of craziness we're seeing with government shutdowns and whatnot, I do think this is one area where the parties are going to be able to come together and insist on a sort of a pullback of this overreach. I don't think this country is going to allow us to go too far in that direction. Despite some of the extreme views that we see out there, I just don't think that that's going to be allowed to happen here. I feel pretty confident about that. But it does require that we as citizens stay vigilant, that we insist that our representatives move on this, and that we elect people who are going to be willing to stand up and do something about it.
I don't know if you know. You probably met Dianne Feinstein since you've been running for office. I don't know, but she.
I haven't yet.
Oh well, that's unfortunate. Well, once you get elected, you'll be close buddies, I'm sure. But she sits in a pretty powerful position in the Senate on the Senate Intelligence Committee, and yet she seemed to have been ineffectual. Or at least not willing to take the bull by the horns, even when the bull is goring her in the side, like the CIA has done. And I guess my fear is that people get into Congress and the Senate, they get compromised. And by money or fear, I don't know what. But how do you think you're going to hold up in that? I mean, obviously you can work well under pressure. I can see that from your campaign. But how well, seriously, I think you've done a great job of campaigning. But how are you going to hold up in that situation? Do you think you're going to be able to be effectual? I know this kind of goes back to the first question I asked you, but what do you see yourself operating as in that environment?
Yeah. Well, that's going to be the ultimate test of character, isn't it? I think none of us really ever can completely know how we're going to behave in some circumstances until we're forced to confront them. So it'll be a great test of character. I think the things that I have going for me are, the first is that I'm so connected to this community, to this district. My whole campaign is run on donors from this district for the most part, individuals. I'm not owned by any party, by any group. And while I've always felt comfortable with that, I've had 2 years of campaigning to develop my voice and my positions and my opinions without interference, and I feel very strong and clear about many of them. And so it's definitely going to be easier for me now to stand up for them than it was when I started. So I'm really actually quite grateful that I've had the opportunity to do a completely grassroots campaign up to now. And that's going to hold me in good stead. I don't owe anyone. And, for example, Doug LaMalfa has taken money specifically from the Koch brothers and Monsanto and crop insurance agencies and from a private PAC that we can't see beyond the firewall. So, you know, what kind of compromises is he having to make with people who don't even have a real interest in this district? I'm not going to have that kind of problem. The other thing I think that's going for me is that this is the first time I'm running for office. I don't have deep party connections. I love many people in my party. I'm meeting great politicians on both sides of the aisle that I'm excited about working with. But I've had a career. I've had kids. You know, I'm in the later part of my life where my positions have about the world and where, what I think is most important and how important people and people's lives are, that I'm just not less, I think I'm much less subject to being tempted to go for big money or fame or something. I'm in this because I love where I am, I love what I do, and I want to do something great for this district. And I think I have a few things going for me there. And I tell people all the time, I expect, once I'm in Congress, I expect people in this district to hold me accountable, because we will need that. When people are in Congress, they need people to have their back on those tough issues and also to call them out when they're going in the wrong direction.
Well, that sounds like democracy.
What's that? Doesn't it?
What's that like? Yeah, that sounds wonderful, quite honestly, and refreshing to hear from a candidate. We hear so many just slogan, empty, you know, rhetoric, and so it's refreshing to hear something like that from you. The well, we only have maybe another 4 or 5 minutes here, and I'd like you to just, anything that you feel it's important for listeners and voters to know and to do, especially in the short period before the election. I'm just going to give you this next 4 or 5 minutes to just give us your best pitch and communicate with our listeners.
Oh, thank you so much, and thanks for the opportunity for all this. You know, I could talk for hours about these issues that I find fascinating and important. I do want to make a pitch about voting and becoming educated on the issues, but let me just take a minute in case people don't know that much about me to tell them a little bit more about me. So I did grow up in the Bay Area, but spent my summers and weekends here in Grass Valley, where I live now. And I moved up here about 10 years ago. My kids went through school up here. I've been in community leadership positions since I've been in Grass Valley. And I do have two kids who are right in the middle of what we're all dealing with in this economy as well. My younger son is going to college, and we had to go in his first year to community college because of the issue of student debt. We didn't want him to take on the kind of debt that students have right now. So the $1.2 trillion in debt that they hold, which is keeping them from buying cars and homes, is going to impact the entire economy. And it makes it difficult for them to move forward in a way we were able to. You know, I can see that in my own family. My older son, who's a veteran and is working now out in Tennessee very hard to support his little family, not long ago he was making minimum wage at $7.25 an hour and was eligible for food stamps at that wage. So it's critical that we support our working families. I will be an advocate for that. It's critical that we support our veterans all the way through, the things we've asked them to do to help us, even in wars they may not agree with. It's important that we are always having the backs of our veterans, and that's important to me. Again, something I see in my very own family. And I've been a working mother all my life. I get the issues of how hard it is to be in the workforce today and see so many of the things we've earned taken away, or that people are trying to take that away from us. And I will fight tooth and nail for the people, the working people that I am, that we are, that the majority of people in this district are. So I want people to know that about me. the biggest pitch I have right now, and I think I get a minute or two still.
Sure, yeah, go ahead. You have time.
Okay, is that we must get people out to vote, and we must become educated on the issues. And I am not going to, you know, I'm absolutely going to recognize how hard it is with all the chaff we get in the news, how hard it is sometimes to distinguish the right position and the real truth of the facts. But you can use your critical thinking skills, find the sources you trust, double-check the data, pick the issues that are most important to you. If it's too much to be educated on all the issues, because there are a lot out there, pick a few that are most important to you. Make sure you understand the basic facts and vote on that. Vote on those important issues. Vote on the issues that you know will impact your lives today directly and your kids' lives tomorrow. That means we must do a better job of getting out to vote. And you already made the pitch. People need to register. People need to show up. Absentee ballots are already out there, so get educated and take the time to sit down with that absentee ballot and make sure you understand each of the issues. I want to add one other thing, because we're finding that some people think they're registered are not. I'm not sure why that's happening, but if you have any doubt that you might not be registered, or if you did not vote in the last couple of elections, please call your county clerk, whichever county you're in, and confirm that you are already registered, and do it before the 20th so you can fix that if you need to. Please, please come out and vote. Please vote for the people you know have your best interest in mind. I would love to have a chance to be the advocate for this district that we haven't had for almost 30 years. So that's my pitch.
Well, I want to thank you for being on Unspun with us today. I always find you amazingly well-educated and knowledgeable about so many issues, and always a pleasure to talk with you just as an individual. So I feel like all of us have had the great pleasure today to have you on the Spun and Experiment Truth-Telling. And I know that
I want to thank you.
Do you have another do you have any websites or Facebook page you'd like to give to the listeners so they can keep up with where you're at on your campaign and maybe get to see you before the election?
Yes. We're done with the forums now, but those were really, really great, and I'm so pleased that they were taped. So there are taped versions of all three forums that I had with Doug LaMalfa. Links are on my website that you already named, HeidiHallForCongress.com. We're also putting up every article we can find that talks about my positions or what we're doing or what Doug LaMalfa has been doing if I'm involved, all on the website, HeidiHallForCongress.com. I have a very active campaign Facebook page that my campaign manager and I both manage. So I put every time I have an event, I remind people that it's coming up. I have some positions I've stated on there. I let people know if there are fires that are impacting us. You know, I try to make it a useful site for this district, but I also make sure that people know where I'm going to be that day in case they want to find me. So please like my Facebook page so that you can get those updates. Please check out the website. I have a Twitter account. It's at @vote_Heidi, and we try to get the word out that way as well. We have a campaign email on the website if you want to tell me something, if you want me to be aware of some issue you think I might not be aware of, please email me. Between my campaign manager and I, we look at every single email that comes in, and we appreciate the input we get.
Well, thank you, Heidi, once more for being on Unspun and Experiment of Truth-Telling today.
Thanks so much, Doug. It's always a pleasure. Happy to come on anytime.
Well, good luck on your campaign, and looking forward to what happens there on Election Day.
Great. Okay. Thanks again.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Unspun and Experiment Truth-Telling. Our guest today has been Heidi Hall, congressional candidate from California District 1. I will link to Heidi Hall's website on KKRN.org, along with the archives of this show. Next up on KKRN 88.5 is Peace Talks Radio.